Hello, friends. This is Timothy L. Price, and today I am interviewing another of my contacts from the homeschool industry, and his name is Jim Musser. Jim, how you doing?
Doing great, Tim. Thanks for inviting me to be on today.
You betcha. Now, I'd like to have you give a little bit of a elevator pitch of who you are, where you're at, and what you've been involved with.
Well, I spent most of my adult life as a campus pastor at two different universities, the University of Kansas in Lawrence and at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina, and for a total of actually 37 years working with college students. And I retired about a year and a half ago, almost 2 years now, and am now... have a consulting ministry for churches and parents called Upstream Ministries.
Excellent, excellent. Now, what does Upstream Ministries, what's it all about?
Well, it's really based on my experiences working with college students, and I use the metaphor of a stream or a river, and the church and the Christian home is upstream, and those kids kind of float down the river and arrive on campus downstream as 18-year-olds. And then I could observe from what I saw in them when they arrived as to what the conditions upstream were. Because you can, if you see a river that's polluted in front of you, typically the source of pollution is not in front of you, it's upstream. And so I use that metaphor with the idea, okay, if I am encountering students who arrive and they've been involved with Christian churches, they've been raised in a Christian home, then their spiritual lives tell me a lot about what's going on upstream.
Now, what are some of the things that you discovered over the years in working with students about their spiritual life? Yeah, I think you told me at the homeschool conference, a Great American Homeschool Conference in Ohio, that it was surprising to you that so many of these kids come to you at the university level and they don't know basically their butt from apple butter concerning their faith, to put it bluntly.
Yeah. Well, I saw that they really didn't know the scriptures very well. They might have a few verses or biblical stories they could tell, but they didn't really know their way around the Bible, how to find things, and they really didn't have ability to articulate their faith, what that really was, what they really believed, and they had no missional view of their lives. They often arrived on campus with the idea, I just want to find an extension of my youth group so I can make some good friends. And there was little understanding of, okay, how does the Great Commission play in your life as a college student? They didn't see the university as a mission field. They just saw it as a way to get their degree and have a lot of fun and make some good friends and live a moral life. That's kind of the extent of it. They weren't comfortable praying oftentimes. There were just a lot of things that you would assume that a young person of 18 years of age, having been raised in that environment of church and home, would no more would be more grounded in their faith. I often, Tim, compare it to if a student graduated from high school and was illiterate, then we would say that's a failed public school system and probably demand some change. But yet we're really having students come to college, this is my experience, as 18-year-olds, and they're basically spiritually illiterate. They don't really have a full understanding of what it means to follow Jesus.
would you say that that is the vast majority of them, or would you say that it's a minority of students that are like this?
I would love to say it's a minority, but I would say the majority of them are like that. There are some that are a little further along. There are many that are open to learning more about their faith and what it means to follow Jesus, and that's where we would take them. One of the challenges was that if you're trying to make an impact on campus with, you know, through your students as a ministry, you know, they really need to have the tools already, and you can help them learn how to use those in a college setting. But basically, most of, you know, my colleagues and I spent at least a year, maybe 2 years, trying to get them up to speed of what it truly looked like to follow Jesus. And that was time, in some way, it wasn't really wasted. I mean, we want to take kids where they're at. But ideally, you want those kids to be ready to go when they hit campus. And they're ready to talk to their roommates and their suite mates and their classmates and even their professors about their faith in Jesus. And most of those young people are just not at that point. They're like what the Hebrew writer describes in the end of chapter 5 and chapter 6. They're spiritual infants, and they're just not ready for the meat of proclaiming the gospel and really demonstrating what it means to follow Jesus to their peers.
I think what you said about, you know, somebody coming out of a education system and not being able to read, functionally read, that we would call that a failed system of some sort. And I think that, wow, that is a tragedy that we come to the realization that that's happening at church. So what would you say about these churches or these kids that are coming from these backgrounds? Are they coming from just nominal churches? Or are they coming in nominal educational systems like Christian education? Or is it substantive in both ways, would you say?
Well, I think that, for example, I met a freshman student before he arrived on campus to talk with him about being involved in our ministry. And he was involved in one of our supporting churches. And it's a church that is really big on missions, and they talked about missions a lot. And so when I met with him a few weeks into the semester and just asked him how things were going, he said, "Oh, it's great. You know, I really love CCF, our ministry, and I'm making friends, and I love it. It's small." And I always perk up when I hear a student say, "Oh, I just love it being small." Because oftentimes what that means is they really don't want it to grow. They just want it to stay small for themselves. And I talked to the student about the Great Commission and talked to him about the fact that he's supposed to be an ambassador for Christ. He'd grown up in this church, and he said, "You know what, I really never thought about it that way." Now, he had grown up in this church and spent his whole life there and with his parents in a Christian home. And a lot of it is that and this is kind of the gist of my ministry and what I'm trying to get across to both parents and churches, is that church programs, Sunday school classes, youth groups, sermons, are not effective if in and of themselves are making disciples, that we need to train up disciples. And most of our churches are focused on kind of passive listening, you know, sermons, 35, 40 minutes, sometimes an hour. And it's passive listening, you know, youth groups, there may be activities, but there's not a lot of focus. Okay, how do we live this out? And what I see is that we're taking the biblical responsibility of parents to disciple their children, and we've turned it into this, and I think it's been unintentional, but we've turned it into this kind of church growth strategy that if we can offer good programs to parents for their kids, we're going to grow. And what's happened over time is the parents are basically being brought up to think, well, you know, it's the church's responsibility to raise my kids. It's my responsibility just to get them there and maybe reinforce some of the things they're being taught. But it's not my primary responsibility. And in my understanding of the scripture, that's just totally wrong. It's the church is to help parents to disciple their kids, but not to do it for them. And I think that's kind of the model that we've got set up. And then a lot of parents just say, they don't know because they've never been discipled. So that's one of the issues is we can't disciple kids if the adults don't know how to do discipleship.
So we've got basically what you're saying, a two-generational gap here on what the church should be doing and whatnot. So, well, what about all of the apologetics and all of the, do you know how many apologetics books have been published in 2023?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So where is it all going and what's it accomplishing?
Well, I think in particular for this generation, apologetics is not something that they're really drawn to. They're drawn to authenticity. And you might have a lot of knowledge about, well, you can prove the scriptures, but a lot of kids will just shrug their shoulders. So what? You know, they want to see authentic living. And so that's where, again, that's where parents can really disciple their children by living out an authentic life following Jesus, not just being religious, not just going to church every week, but they're actually living out the Christian life for their kids to observe and to follow. And we get focused on right doctrine and things, and often kids aren't paying attention to that anyway. They don't take that on with them, you know, into college. Some of them do, but you know, most of them they wouldn't know how to explain the doctrine of their church.
Jim, we need to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
Hey, friends, this is Timothy L. Price here, and I just want to talk to you a little bit about how you could be supportive of Kingdom Citizenship. Just buy our books. Labyrinth of the World, The Paradise of the Heart is a fantastic book, and we have it in hardbound. We have it in softbound for the budget-minded, and we also have it in an audiobook. Now, if you order this from my website, which is labyrinthoftheworld.com, or you can get all three and even an ebook on Amazon. Go and buy the books, get excited, share the books with other people, and be a part of what we're doing here on Kingdom Citizenship. Thanks so much. Hey, folks, this is Timothy L. Price with Kingdom Citizenship Podcast. And one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was finding more guests for the show. If you have people that you know of that have a good testimony, or they have a great story, or they have good teaching that would help us gain understanding and encouragement, we want to talk to them. So get a hold of us, and we would like to put some people on. Talk to you soon.
All right. We're back from a commercial break here. And again, Jim, where did we leave off? We've had a little bit of a break for those in the audience. We had a technical problem that's taken us 2 days to get fixed. So, Jim, where do we leave off?
You'll probably have to remind me, Tim.
All right. Well, I think what we're talking about is how broken kids are that come to college that have a background and have an understanding of, you know, church or religion or God or whatever, but yet it is so shallow that it's almost impossible for you to work with these kids or for these kids to be functional. I guess that's a better way of saying it. Is that about the size of it?
Yeah. I mean, and I have to be honest, most of my ministry career was basically doing just that, trying to take kids from really not knowing a lot of anything and often not really understanding what it meant to follow Jesus and help them learn to do that. And for, I mean, that's just, that was the norm. And I think most of my colleagues did the same thing. And none of us really thought too much about it, but I began to think more about it probably in the last 8 to 10 years, like, okay, this doesn't make any sense. And so you work with kids where you took them where they were, which is always a good thing. But, you know, what I realized, it would be so much better, not only for them, but for our ministries and reaching out to the universities, if they were much further along spiritually, because they could have a real impact.
Right. Now, would you say that these kids were from nominal backgrounds, like, you know, some mainline denomination or some group that really didn't have a focus on ministry or on discipleship? Or were these kids more from the evangelical vein of things?
I think it was a mix. I mean, we had kids from all kinds of denominations. And it was hard, particularly in knowing what went on in the home. I would meet some of their parents. But I think really, Tim, it gets back to the issue, how are we discipling adults? Because in the church, you talk about, well, are they part of a, you know, did the church really emphasize discipleship? I have found very few churches that really emphasize discipleship in the sense of training people on how to follow Jesus. Discipleship seems to be more of education. You're teaching people about the Bible. You're, you know, maybe teaching theology, but you're not really training them to, like Jesus did.
So it's more like trivia and tribalism. You know, this is what is to be believed, and this is just a bunch of information that you collect and parrot, and that's about it.
Again, I don't want to implicate anybody's motives in a sense. I think in reality, that's what pastors are being trained up to do. They're being trained. I know I was trained how to preach a sermon, you know, trained in theology. But there was not much, and this was 40 years ago, but it was not much in, okay, how does this work in the real world? How do you teach people to follow Jesus? How do you bring them along? There was none of that. It was just more passing along information, you know, learning how to listen to people. And so I think that's the way most churches operate. So what you've had is several generations of adults that have gone to church, but they haven't ever really been discipled. They go on Sunday morning, they hear a 30, 40-minute sermon. You know, Sunday schools are being dropped by most churches anymore. And so they get that 30 minutes, and then they leave. And oftentimes they're...
How can you train people in... So I didn't mean to interrupt you there. How can they train people in 30 minutes?
They can't. See, I mean, that's a thing. It's like, I mean, it's probably seems radical, but the way in which we have approached how a church operates is not very functional in discipleship, because you can have a sermon that can lay a groundwork, but you have to do more than that. And some groups have small groups. I mean, there's some churches that, you know, probably have their small groups. I know our local church has a small group that's tied often to the pastor's message. But it's still more discussion. It's not really, okay, how do we get out there and really lay this out? I just feel like most of church, the activities where we're supposedly learning, it's all passive learning. There's not a lot of, okay, we've talked about this, now I'm going to show you how to do this.
I remember we talked a little bit about apologetics, and you know, I was going to, I was going to mention a statistic. Did you know in 1963 that there were 312 documents or books or publications that were filed with the Library of Congress dealing with the subject of apologetics, Christian apologetics? Mm-hmm. And that was the same year that, of course, that they threw prayer out of school. And you know, a lot of evangelicals look at that as the downward spiral of America and the church. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the annual debt of America in 1963, which was $360 billion. A lot of dollars. If you extrapolate that out and compare some statistics, in 2023, the national debt was, what, 33 some odd trillion dollars. Do you know how many books, or do you know how many publications were filed with the Library of Congress as far as being apologetics type of publications?
I do not.
That number was over 43,000 books or publications regarding apologetics. Now, you know, it's odd to compare debt and apologetics, but we know that $34 trillion is way out of shape for the economy and what's going on in this country and where it's going to lead. Where do you think that puts the apologetics publications? If we were to exactly extrapolate out a comparison between debt and apologetics, the apologetics was the number that we were extrapolating against, the debt would be over $42 trillion by comparison. So that tells you how far out of whack apologetics. So you were telling me that kids really don't care about that stuff anymore. They want authenticity. So the church, while the church is busy pumping everybody with apologetics that they can't seem to recall or don't seem to understand or be able to use, what young people really want is authenticity, something also the church really isn't dealing in that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, and I think that that's often the history of the church. It's always a step behind often where it needs to be. And apologetics, when I first came into campus ministry, I mean, that we all thought that that was pretty effective. And there were people, I don't know if you remember the guy with InterVarsity, and I think he's still doing some things, Cliff Connectly. He would go around.
I don't know the name.
Yeah, he would go around the campuses, kind of like the preachers of the day, and he kind of took advantage of how students often react to the campus preachers, and he would start out and just, you know, say something, and he'd say, okay, I'll take your question. And so he argued from an apologetic standpoint. But I think that a lot of times, I mean, particularly when you have so many people that think truth is relative, it's kind of like, well, so what? You know, you're telling me all this stuff that supposedly proves, you know, Jesus rose from the dead or Jesus, Son of God. So what? I mean, we think it should have this major impact, but they're not at that point. They're more looking for somebody who really cares about them and loves them. And I think it's not that they can't have an impact, but it's not how you get through the front door. You know, it's like door to door evangelists. You know, you don't see many of those anymore because the culture has changed. And the kind of apologetics is kind of the same way. It's like we're using an old method in a culture that's completely changed.
Right. Well, there's an old saying, you know, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
That's right.
If we haven't communicated to people that we actually care for them as people, it really doesn't do well for them as far as it doesn't do well for us as far as a message or as far as trying to connect with them, because we're not even in the same universe.
Yeah, and that's the danger of, you know, the church just getting off on tangents that aren't very helpful in reaching the masses. You know, it's like there's a lot of churches that are diving deep into the politics of the country. And, you know, I mean, it's okay to talk about politics, but you can't have that be kind of your main message when you, you know, if you're expecting to reach the masses, because the masses don't all agree with you. There are going to be a lot of differences. And so if you make that kind of your main thing, like we support liberal causes or we support conservative causes, then you're going to lose a lot of people. I mean, we're supposed to be about proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ and his love and just a, what a wonderful, merciful God we have. And if we get sidetracked with all this other stuff, then it's real tough. And you see a lot of energy and passion for a lot of things in the church, but discipleship isn't necessarily one of them.
Right. Well, exactly. That's a big issue. And I think that, you know, if you talk about politics or about conservative or liberal issues, you've just alienated a number of people in a room that you're now trying to represent a transcendent reality and transcendent truth to. Well, why would you subject your transcendent message to a temporal, placeholder? That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, that's a thing about thinking about parents and kids. If their parents are really passionate about these, you know, things that are really off the message of the gospel, then that's what they're teaching their kids. That is the most important. And so that's where it comes in, you know, that we have to be really cognizant of what, you know, our passions are and what our kids are seeing, because we may be sending messages that are completely off of what we think we'd like to have them, you know, accept as truth.
Okay, we're going to cut away to another break, and we'll be right back.
This is Tim with Kingdom Citizenship Podcast, and I want to talk to you for a minute about advertising. You know, this podcast is not cheap to put together. And
right.
So we want to offset the cost with advertising.
That's
fun. Say if you make something, create something, or sell something, we can get together and put together a advertisement for you and put it up on the podcast on a regular basis. Let's get together and see how we can help you make some money. Hello, this is Timothy L. Price with Kingdom Citizenship. And today I'd like to talk to you about another book that's going to be encouraging and inspiring to you. Now, no doubt that people all over the place are wondering what in the world is going on in America today. Well, this book, The Coming Caesars, is a book that's going to tell you exactly what's going on and why it's going on. Now, I don't place too much hope in the politics of the day. In fact, I think it's going to disappoint everyone. But this book is going to give you an understanding why we need Kingdom Citizenship Podcast. And so get the book, get inspired, get encouraged, and realize the value that we have with Kingdom Citizenship Podcast.
Okay, so we're back, Jim. So I think in this third segment, what I'd like to talk about is what can we do? I mean, if a lot of kids are coming to college and they're completely unprepared to share the gospel, to represent Jesus, to even understand their own basic faith, what can we do both at home and then, when and where we meet people on the street, you know, that are young and that sort of thing?
Well, I think it really begins with the parents. God has set up the parents to be the main disciples of their children. And if you see the trends of the church over the last 40 years, you see a movement away from parents really taking that responsibility and instead contracting that out to the church. And often the churches are encouraging it because it helps their growth, because we've got these great programs for your kids. we need to get back to what the Bible says, is that, you know, you talk about the Lord when you wake up and when you walk down the road and when you, you know, before you go to bed. And that's what parents need to be doing. They need to be, they need to have an authentic relationship, an intimate relationship with Jesus. That's first and foremost, because you can't fake it. And then secondly, then you have to pass that along to your kids. And there are many ways to do that. One is you read scripture together, you pray with them, you talk about the Lord, you ask good questions. What do you think God is like? What do you think God thinks of you? And those questions, they aren't meant to be like formulaic, but they're questions that will lead to discussions. And you can begin to understand what your child is thinking, because sometimes they're thinking things that you wouldn't guess they're thinking, but in conversations, you can kind of pull that out. And so those kind of conversations, but also taking your kids along in your service to the Lord. You know, like, say there's a sick neighbor down the street and you know them, and you're going to bake something, you're going to take it, or you're going to get groceries for them or something. You take your child along, let them experience what it means to serve somebody. Mission trips are great and I encourage that, but it's not just a one-off thing. It's like, let's integrate those kind of things into our lives, and then the kids get to experience that with us. And so you're really showing them by your life what it means to follow Jesus. And I think, you know, particularly young kids, they want to imitate their parents. I think that's God designed. And so we as parents need to take advantage of that. That's why I don't think the intervention time is with the teenagers. Most of the books that you read about, you know, are available out there, are always approaching the problem of kids and faith in the teenage years. And if that's where you're starting, I think you're starting way late. I mean, it's better late than never, but you really need to get back to when they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, when they're so malleable and they're really looking to you for cues of what's important in life and what to believe. And so I think that, so in order to do that, parents need to have their own individual relationships with God being strengthened. And that, to me, is what the church should be involved in. I mean, it's a radical statement in some ways. Well, it's a radical statement in some ways saying, you know, the church in many ways needs to get out of the children's ministry and youth ministry business and start focusing on the adults. Because if you have the vast majority of your adults who are well discipled, then there's less need for children's ministry and youth ministry. You may still need it, because obviously you're going to reach people that aren't believers and they need help. But we have just basically put all our chips, you know, in that pile and said, yeah, this is where we're going to focus our energy. And hardly anything is being done to reach the adults and really disciple them. And here's, Tim, how I see that happening. What I see then is, if you raise kids who are solid spiritually by the time they graduate from high school, whether they go on to college or they, you know, do something else, they're going to be ready to engage the world. And when they end up meeting that special person and want to get married, and they get married and they want to have kids, they're going to know how to disciple their kids because they've been discipled. And sure, you start building generations of disciple makers, and it begins to go. But we've got to form that foundation, and that foundation is not there yet.
Sure. Do you think that working in Bible studies, that for young parents or middle-aged parents or even old parents, is a good way of building up that discipleship battery, if you, you know, if we can make that analogy?
I think so. As long as it, I think it just needs to be intentional, because I think it's just like, well, we can, okay, we're going to study 1 Timothy, you know, for the next 6 weeks or whatever. Okay, well, what's the purpose of that? You know, and you...
Well, right, for direct application of something. It's not right. just, we're not just studying to study. We're studying right. to make practical application of
yeah.
of things
right.
or bring practical application. You know, I talk to yeah. people all the time. They some people are a little bit upset with me because of the way I come off as kind of a prophetic type. And I've had three ministers here in town say, we don't like what you're posting online. Well, okay, I'm sorry that you don't like that. But you know what? I actually believe in Ephesians 4:11, where it says that God has given mm-hmm. some as prophets,
right.
some as apostles,
right.
some as preachers and teachers and apostles. What?
Mm-hmm.
For the maturation of the body of Christ, of bringing together
right.
and to building up to God's purposes. Well, if we don't have 3/5 of those giftings and callings active in what we call church,
mm-hmm.
it'd be like going down to the body shop and saying, okay, I want you to repair my Toyota Camry here. How are you going to do it? And he tells me, and I say, well, let me take 3/5 of the tools away from you. He's going to look at you like, what planet are you from? But that's exactly mm-hmm. what we've done in the church. And we've mm-hmm. hamstrung really God's purposes, in my opinion, because we need to be able to make practical application of all aspects of what God expects. And I find that pretty hard to do within the confines of what calls itself church these days.
Mm-hmm.
But a Bible yeah. study now, we could probably begin to make some strong steps in that direction as far as discipleship,
yeah.
practical discipleship.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think, again, it's just with the intention that there's really practical application and, you know, accountability. I think that those things, I mean, one of the challenges, Tim, is, and I've actually had people say this to me, it's like, you know, people just don't want this, you know, they want to, they like it the way it is, you know, they can feel good about themselves, they go to church, but they don't want accountability, they don't want to be stretched. And it is, it's an uphill battle. I don't suppose that it's going to be easy. It's a real change. It's like, you know, I've sometimes compared myself a little bit to Jeremiah's ministry. I mean, Jeremiah kept telling the Israelites things they did not want to hear, and they hated him for it, but he was telling the truth. And his main goal was to get them back on the right track. And that's what God told him to do. It didn't matter really if they listened or not. God just said, you've got to do this. And in many ways, I feel the same way. It's like, I know that people are not going to be too excited about some of this stuff, because it's really calling out what we've been doing, because it's, in my mind, it's not very effective when you're losing anywhere from 50% to 80% of your kids from the faith after they graduate from high school. That calls for something major to change. And in my humble opinion, the church has doubled down on most of it. It's like, you know, that's what we're doing. And it's like, well, but it doesn't work. That's the thing. It just doesn't work very well. I mean, it's and most of these people are really good intentioned. That's the thing. I'm not deriding their intent, because it's the way they've been brought up. But it's like, you need to step back and look at this, you know, and begin to rethink some things.
Well, you know, they say that insanity is doing the same thing the same way and expecting different results.
Right.
And if they aren't yeah. looking at losing between 50 and 80% of their kids after graduation, something is seriously wrong with their,
yeah.
with saying, okay, well, this is what we're going to keep on doing.
Yeah. Well, I think I just have a sense that a lot of churches say, well, you know, in their own minds, we're the exception. And there are a lot of churches, that are saying that. And the thing is, they don't look at the metrics, because typically a youth minister, once that kid graduates from high school, the only real contact they may have with them, some youth ministers will follow up on their students, maybe, you know, do an annual visit or something, but they'll see them when they come home for the holidays. And so if they see them in church and they, hey, how you doing, Bill? Doing great, man. You know, having a great time, going to church, you involved? Yeah. But they have no idea really what's happening with that kid. And so, but they assume, because of their great programs, that things have gone well.
What are they going to say, Jim, when the kid comes home at Thanksgiving and says, well, I am an atheist now. I'm just coming to church to satisfy the folks. What's the youth minister going to say then?
Oftentimes, I'll just say the university let them stray. I mean, I hear that a lot. I've talked to youth pastors and say, I'd never send any of my students or recommend they go to a university. That's no way, you know. And it's like, but it's a mission field, you know. Do you not care for the lost? I mean, I look at the first century, and we had, you know, at least probably three generations of young people, you know, people growing up, and the church thrived in a much worse pagan culture than any culture we have right now. And it thrived. So it's possible, but I see a lot of churches on the defensive saying, well, it's we're losing our kids because, you know, they're going to those secular universities and they're terrible. And we're going to send our kids to, you know, Christian colleges. And before I left campus ministry, we hired a young woman that graduated from a Christian university that I will not mention. But she told stories. about all kinds of stuff going on that, of course, the university's not going to talk about or admit. But students were, you know, doing drugs and having sex and all this stuff. I mean, everything that they're all against, what happens at the university was happening at the Christian universities too. And so, but I think that's where often the blame is put. It's those terrible universities that are corrupting our kids.
So would you say that the church ministries and whatnot, even though they're well-meaning and all, are kind of out to lunch and aren't willing to take responsibility and look at real details for what they are?
Well, I think there's a combination of things. I think they're so busy, you know, like I think of youth pastors, children's ministers. I think of the children's pastor at our church. I mean, she's running constantly, you know, and youth pastors, there's so many demands on them. I mean, parents expect a lot of these leaders of these programs.
They expect more of those people than they do of themselves.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of pressure, and the higher, I've had youth pastors and children's pastors tell me too, look, I'm not in the position to make a lot of major decisions. That's above me, you know? And what they're basically saying is, well, the senior pastor typically likes to have the programs because it gets the people in the pews, and, you know, we can say, hey, we're a growing church. And that's unfortunate, but that's a lot of youth pastors know things aren't right. I've talked to a number of them. I've read stuff online. They know that things aren't right, but they don't know how to change it because they don't have any power. I think that's one of the challenges. And then, of course, some of them go on to be in higher up leadership, and then, well, they've got all kinds of other expectations upon them. And so it just keeps going in that direction.
Right.
And
they see the light, they see the money coming through the door, and, well, we got to keep the gravy train going here. So, okay, well, we've knocked that one around pretty good. So Jim, what is the name of your, so what is the name of your ministry again, and how would people get a hold of you if they wanted to find out more about what you do, or do you have any publications that you published?
Well, I've got answers for all those. Upstream Ministries. Upstream Ministries is the name of my ministry. They can find more about that at jimmusser.com, just my name, JimMusser.com. And I do have two books out. One is Letters from Downstream, which really covers what we've been talking about today. It's for church leaders, for parents, and just talks a lot about the difficulties that we're having raising up solid disciples within our churches, and how we can better do that by getting the parents more at the center of the discipleship of their kids. And then the second one is Your Faith Ready for College? And so, Tim, I'm trying to kind of do work both ends. The trying to get parents to begin discipling their kids very young, laying that foundation. But also, one of the things that I see often is there's no preparation at all for kids to have spiritual resources after they graduate from high school and go on to college. Nobody's really focused on that. They're focused on scholarship, housing, majors, and typically it's during new student orientation, a month or two before classes start, where parents are rushing around trying to find churches or campus ministries, and then they, find out this information, stuff it in that plastic bag, and on the way home they say, "Here, you need to look at all this stuff," and the kid never does. And so a lot of kids come on the campus, they could be fairly solid Christians, but they may be also vulnerable. They're just, have a weak foundation, and they get involved with, all the wrong people, their roommates, their suite mates, all the stuff that's going on. If it's a secular university, most likely they aren't going to be Christians. And so they get off track real quick. And so what this book does is just a six-step process where they research spiritual resources beginning in their junior year. And by the time they get to campus, they know people. And that's what kids want anyway. They want to know people. And if they know people, then they have a place to go. There's a community that they can get involved in, and that community can help them continue to grow. And I saw very few people doing that.
Wow. Well, that is really amazing. You're dealing with a particular niche, and you're playing to the need, I guess, that mm-hmm. is there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, very good. Well, Jim, I really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we can get some people interested in what you're doing. And the body of Christ would be built up and strengthened. I think that's what this podcast is really all about.
Well, that's great, Tim, and I appreciate the invitation. It's great to see you again after almost a year. And it's been a great conversation.
Good. Okay. Well, wonderful. Well, maybe we'll have to do this again sometime when we've got some more stuff to bat around.
I would love it. I would love it.